Okay. The first presentation here, just take over and just I have the microphone on, therefore it's somewhat easier, just continue talking here, is about OpenACS, and it's something like an introduction for all of the people who have just listened from some distance of what OpenACS is, and it's also some kind of like a summary what happened in the last years and what kind of improvement we have seen here in the platform. And it's about whatever, some kind of what's new and what kind of new packages are there. I mean, I will also address some kind of, let's say, applications we became quite important, at least for us. On one hand side, to reduce the maintenance of large OpenACS applications, and also about experiences, let's say, also from the COVID experience, where we had a surge, a very strong boost on request, and also while many of the e-learning platforms worldwide came to a halt, I mean, we somehow managed to survive. This is actually quite good, and we also, it also caused us to rethink of what we're doing and bring in new functionality, and also this is something like an outlook of what's coming up next. I mean, the OpenACS is quite a large software package, and when introducing OpenACS 5.10, it was the difference between 5.10 and its predecessor. It was 5.9.2, I think, was, you see there, it was 3,500 files were changed, and we have the 6 additional packages, and we have direct contributions from 13 developers. Therefore, it's more or less showing the active community, active in the sense of developing code for this. Altogether, the code summary is we have now 349 packages. A package is a set of files with sometimes services, some of them application packages. And from these 349 packages, not all of them are actively maintained. I mean, some of these were developed by commercial developers, and if the money runs out for them, they have no interest on maintaining it for free. Therefore, the most important packages are actively maintained. This is a 93 here. And altogether, OpenACS has 131 contributors, and if one looks at the number of files, you see there's 21,000 files, and this is just the release. I mean, there's, if one takes all of the package which are available, the numbers would be even larger, but it's about 3.2 million lines of code. Lines of code is there, most of the part is tickle code. I mean, it's 300,000 lines of code and 200,000 lines of SQL, and it has quite a large regression test. This is a release, and in our local instance, we have also much more, let's say, software in a way, and you see it's the figures are more or less nearly doubled for this. I mean, in our e-learning system, we have 40,000 files, and we have 9.5 million lines of code. Therefore, it's a quite a large amount of software. And certainly maintaining and working with this is certainly some importance, and is something where also we tried to put a focus on it. And if one looks at the code age of OpenACS, then you see the following graph. The question is, what is a code age? What I did here was using Git blame statistics and show how long did a line survive, or if you look at the current release, how old is every line there? And by this, you can see what are the changes, what is stable code, and what has changed over the years, and what is coming, what was touched in contributions. And we have there 20 lines of history in the OpenACS repository. And I mean, the average age per line is about 10 years. I mean, it's actually more or less half of it. And you see also the distribution of these lines is also somewhat not evenly distributed. And if you look at the larger releases, before these releases, there's normally just a code revamp happening. And the code revamp is happening for many reasons, often just for, let's say, getting rid of deprecated commands and whatever. And actually, the oldest lines, which are there for a long time, is the copyright lines in commands from the very first thing, because nobody changes this. I mean, it's, I think 80% of these old lines are actually copyright lines there. And this is just the OpenSS core, which is the packages on the left side here. This is just a handful of packages compared to the rest, but just giving you something like an overview of what is changing in the code. It's actively maintained and changing code. I mean, what has happened there in OpenSES in 5.10? We have there a couple of packages, which I don't have the time now to go in detail, but I mean, some of these were like something like cookie consent, which is became important over the last year. I mean, you know, this annoying consent messages coming up, and there's something about Boomerang. It's a JavaScript library for real-time user management. I mean, with the basic idea is, if you look only on the server side, you have a very limited understanding what the user sees on this side. I mean, and this, with this room, you see more or less how was the performance altogether. When was the request started? When was the data coming in? When was more or less all of the JavaScript files included? And when does the rendering end? And you have many of these points defined there, and you can get very detailed statistics. And I mean, it turns out that the server performance is only a very small fraction of what the user perceives. And it also, what the user perceives depends on if there's a mobile phone, whatever, getting data over slow lines or whatever. You see afterwards what is the real user performance. And it's a very nice JavaScript library. And if you're using user interface things, it's nice. I mean, it's also somewhat invasive because it measures what happens on the client side and sends afterwards this data back to a listener. But it's altogether certainly worthwhile, at least for development. If you want to use it in practice, certainly depends on your privacy, whatever requirements there. We have there also many changes concerning the user interface. I mean, with OpenSS 5.10, we have introduced new styles based on Bootstrap. And we have also here, let's say, many things for quality management. To the proctoring support, I will come later. About quality management, I mean, we have a really large code base, and we had greatly improved the kind of tests we're performing and getting some information what is tested in the code itself, have a code coverage there. And we have also here established a GitLab-based continuous integration pipeline, and there will be also a talk of Hector presenting this in more detail. And I mean, the regression test became also quite large. We have now more than 35,000 tests for the code. And also other requirements is something like Docker images, make it easier to deploy this. Sometimes you need different ways of configuring the systems and so on. I mean, for automated testing, coverage analysis, this interface is somewhat extended in a way. Probably you can't read this, but on the left side you see OpenSES packages, and you see here afterwards what kind of test coverage is there. And if some tests are failing, it just tells you afterwards something is wrong here in this place. And there's also some kind of warnings there, which are, let's say, things which shouldn't be like this, but it's not not be, let's say, a real error, but something which should be addressed actually. And for all of these packages, you can afterwards click on this, and you get for every single package some kind of analysis. What of the public API is tested? And you have their list of things, and you have the coverage here, and you can more or less see afterwards what is happening with this. And also for these API calls, you can afterwards look actually where are they used. I mean, you click on something, you get the API browser, and the API browser here in the middle is the call you're interested in, and you're getting information what is calling this stuff, and on the other side, what does it call itself? And all of these links are clickable, and you can zoom down and see other things. And what is calling this is also including how it is covered with tests. What are the tests, and what are they actually testing? And you can click there, and you see these kind of aspects are tested here. And what is calling this might be other library calls on the left side here, or it might be some web pages which are directly including it. It's not a procedure calling it, but it's a call from a web page, and this kind of information is available for all of OpenACS. It makes it somewhat easier to get around and to understand what is covered and what has to be improved. I mean, here's a short slide of what happened during the COVID crisis. I mean, we have here the LEARN system. It will show up a couple of times. It's an in-house e-learning system of VU. It's based on OpenACS and .learn. And I mean, it's a rather large application. I mean, it's probably one of the most actively used e-learning platforms, at least in European universities. Probably in China, there are even larger systems, but you don't get numbers from this. But in the COVID times and also normal times, in COVID time, we had about 20,000 active users per day doing something there on the platform, just our students and teachers. And it's in the range of very often 400 views per second sustained load on the system. And if one thinks these are high numbers, I mean, we have also here for the Austrian school system, a system developed by Knowledge Markets, and I've seen Franz, where is Franz? Here is Franz, I see. I mean, you can take these numbers probably times two or three. It's much, a much stronger load which is happening there. I mean, what you see here is what has changed here. You have here a summer semester 2019 and summer semester 2020, some kind of numbers here. How did the views change? But the views were actually not so much going up there, because many of the views are just exam preparations, and this don't change so much. But we have there many places there. You see a factor of 7 to a factor of 16. Depending on the kind of services, and certainly what was going up very strongly was something like also chats based from the system. I mean, OpenACS has a built-in chat system, and also the whole thing with bandwidth requirements and lecture streaming, of course, it went strongly up. And the whole thing is running on a single server. It's a classical Xeon-based CPU. It's where the OpenACS Navi server Postgres is on a single server, and I mean, also lecture casting is based on double streams, and also for these streams you have here, we have two streams. One stream is more or less the camera, which is in the back there, which is more or less taking images of or the video of the lecturer, and the other one is the direct stream, which is for lead teaching very good, because a student can afterwards also, the two streams, they can rearrange it as they need it. If you have a smartphone, you probably want to have the lecturer very small, but you're interested in the slides to be able to read it well. And if you have a large screen, you have both things side to side. And at the end, the client can decide how is this arranged. And it's not something like a fixed picture, but it is flexible, they're built up. We see here a couple of, let's say, statistics of how things changed, and also about, let's say, response time here. And normally the response time is well below this 0.1 second. But sometimes there are certainly peaks coming up. And at the beginning of the COVID crisis, certainly many things have changed, and we had to adapt parameters and also fine-tune certain things which were not necessary to fine-tune before. And also, if one looks here at the lower graphic here, also in terms of response time, I mean, in this year, the response time certainly went up there in 2020, and you see also there, here's the number of requests here, and the number of requests, you see here the maximum value of 2019, the right scale is here, the request is here on the lower level, and just the rest is here, the add-on we had to deal with. I mean, if one sketches over the functionality of OpenACS, and always look at the time, so to be not becoming too late, is there are many things for easing the maintenance. For example, a UAN-based registry of CSS and JavaScript files. What does it mean? I mean, in many places you sometimes need to include whatever a JavaScript version, something of a file. But if you have a different theme, if you upgrade things, you have to go all of these pages and address this. And there's an idea of the URN, of an abstract identifier. You have one place in the code where you register this version should map to this URN, and afterwards you can use the URN afterwards for delivery. It's certainly much better. I mean, for the OpenACS user, it was a big advantage to have the so-called dynamic blueprint reloading. I mean, in earlier OpenACS releases, if you change the running system, there was a reloading mechanism, and the reloading affected only the so-called connection threads. I mean, here you see a rough architecture of OpenACS, also of NaviServer. There's a NaviServer daemon, the server running, and the server can have multiple different NaviServer servers. I mean, in most instances, you have only one of the servers, but you can have many of them. And the server has so-called connection threads and other background threads. Background threads is schedule threads. You can say every 10 minutes do this homework or doing something in the background, whatever. And what's new there is more or less that if you change a file and you say reload stuff, everything is reloaded from all of the threads at the same time, which is certainly reducing the number of restarts you require. I mean, for our system, we don't have time for restarts. I mean, the system has to run more or less around the clock, and restart takes some time. I mean, it takes, I don't know, 1 minute. I mean, it's not so bad, but still, if you're in the classroom and everything stops there for 1 minute, everybody's pissed off. I mean, you can't do this. Therefore, it has to run always, and therefore, just if there's something going wrong and you see something is wrong and you can't fix this immediately, it's not good, and this is pretty much there included. I will also address some of the e-learning functionality quite quickly, what we did there, and we have also developed a so-called proctoring component. What does it mean? I mean, it means that if one is taking a remote exam from home, then it's a problem that you have no idea are students cheating or not. And therefore, I mean, the university addressed us, can you do something? More or less, it was 5 weeks before this so-called exam week. Can you do something? And from this point of view, I say this time, well, we can try, but I can't promise you anything. But the university said, doesn't matter. I mean, if the students believe that they are monitored and just if something, it's enough. But I mean, in this COVID time, nobody was in the office. I mean, communication was not so good as other times. And after a couple of weeks, something like 3 or 4 weeks, we had the first prototype. And the question was afterwards, how can we test the stuff? I mean, you do not have afterwards in COVID times, I mean, it should run afterwards for large exams. I mean, for one exam, we have 1,000, 1,500 students coming there. How we test scalability? And in this situation, somebody clever in the administration had the idea, we make a Facebook posting, and the consequence was the student got the message, the only chance for you to see this test requirement before the real test, go there. Then we had, I think, 6,000 students there. And certainly everything broke down. And we've also instrumented the code to figure out where are the bottlenecks. And actually, it worked very well. It worked much better than we expected. And after this test, I was very relaxed. And over for the real exams, it would make it easily. And we got some data. But all of the administration and professors got very nervous because they realized it can be too slow or it can be whatever. Students will see sometimes an error message and they have to press reload. Therefore, it was interesting because my attention level went down, and the other one went up. But at the end, it worked actually very well, and we had afterwards more than 30K remote exams there in this exam weeks, which were there in the at the end of in the semester. I mean, and also we got very positive feedback from the students. I mean, the first time that the students were quite happy that they got some exam. And normally the students complain, one more exam, but they saw that the other university rounds had troubles. And the students were happy that they were not blocked by the by COVID and they can continue their study program. I will go through this over performance things because I will also address this in the Navi server talk, but it's about improving performance. And one of the important things is about also cache performance. And what we did there is, for example, having some kind of partitioning mechanism introduced into OpenSES, which greatly can improve and make it tunable in terms of, let's say, performance on caches which are very frequently hit. And the basic idea is if you have fragmented caches, you need to have less mutex contention, and therefore you have got more parallelism, and therefore it improves the whole system. What's coming up with OpenSES 5.11? I mean, we have now also developed to a large part Bootstrap 5 theme. I mean, Bootstrap 3 was the old code and it's now there. If you have worked with Bootstrap, many things have changed there and certainly require some kind of an environment to make the code switchable between different Bootstrap versions. Many of the class names, many of the, let's say, ways how you specify your lineup are necessary there. We have there also CAPTCHA and kind of stuff. We have also a new code there around the Oracle 19. I mean, most of the installation have using Postgres. Some of the installation have Oracle installation, and for them it's certainly important to have a chance to upgrade to newer versions. There's also a lot of security changes. I mean, these classical hash algorithms used also for crypting the passwords based on SSH1, which we have currently in use, were replaced by something, and it's now there working with modern hash mechanisms, and probably also we will have the Archon 2 family when the release comes out, and there seems like cookie namespaces. If you have on the same instance running many OpenSES instances at the same time, the cookies are based on the domain name of the server in special. And if you have multiple installations, these cookies will override each other. Therefore, it's kind of a trouble if one is overwriting stuff. Therefore, it's possible now to get at this. One also interesting part is here, more or less, I think it's my last slide here, is about server-side tags. I mean, Navi server allows you to register tags, for example, like ADP icon on the server side. And what you can do by this is afterwards you can decide at the execution time what is the resolution of this kind, how it should be resolved. And if one has different icon sets, you can have the same markup in your pages, and depending on the theme you're using, it's resolved differently. And it can work with a no icon set. I mean, at the end, it means it's resolved against images, which are not very efficient because you have this icon 10 times on the page, you have 10 requests, or by some fonts, and in Bootstrap 3, there are these glyph icons, and there are also in Bootstrap 5, they have Bootstrap icons, and there's also a package for these FA icons. Therefore, it's certainly a help to improve the performance. Yeah, I somehow made it within time with my slides. Maybe we have time for one question, and maybe Reinhard just coming up for making here the switch.
I have one question. What would you say is the percentage of Tickle playing
a role in OpenSES? Yeah. So maybe. I mean, the question is how you measure it. I mean, if you start with Tickle, it's a C code, and Navi server is mostly C code. But in OpenSES, we have also here JavaScript libraries and also documentation, other things. But the coding itself, the OpenSES programmer, is a Tickle programmer. No question about this.
Okay.
It's 8.6. We are conservative. I mean, it has to run all the time. And I mean, certainly on my test instance, I'm using various newer versions, but it's it is tested very hard. I mean, it's a lot of concurrency going on. And if there are any kind of, let's say, problems with, I think, for example, regular expressions were very long time leading to crashes in terms of concurrency. There were some global tables there involved. And therefore, many things that in normal multi-threaded application don't show up, we have more or less typically 100 parallel threads running. And it's really testing everything to its knees. Therefore, we are not really in favor of, I mean, normally the server runs there without a crash for, let's say, half a year. Sometimes we are managing to get a crash for whatever reasons, often external reasons, or running out of space, memory, programming bugs, everything. But it has to run all the time. Therefore, we are conservatives in the terms of when to upgrade. I mean, once the A from the 8.7 is gone, we will probably go to 7A. But also there are many differences also there with, for example, coming to UTF-8. I will come to some of the thing in the W server talk as well. There are differences between 8.6, 8.7, and even 9. I mean, 9 is even harder, I guess, because a good deal of our code is based on exotickl, on an X, and we have not made no attempts to make it work with tickl 9. I mean, the main problem there to work with tickl 9 is that the core functionality is much more, let's say, protected in tickl 9. And therefore, object-oriented language is going to the internals. That means one has to externalize many of the calls, and it will certainly slow down the code, and you have to try to whatever cache something afterwards in exotickl to make it faster or whatever, but caching is good and bad. I mean, it's getting maybe out of sync, and I mean it will be some work, and therefore I mean the next step will be 8.7. I don't think so. Yeah,
it's not properly focused, it seems.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Or does it get better if we
put it? Yeah. No. We can check in the break afterwards if somebody from our AV equipment. Not for us. I mean, probably they exist, but we don't have it. Okay, then. Thank you.